The following is one of over 60 audio recordings we have exclusively for our patrons. We wanted to share this talk by Dr. John Cutterback with you on the topic of domestic prudence. Please consider supporting our show by going to patreon.com/thecatholicmanshow. Cheers to Jesus.
We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass.
Ladies and gentlemen.
That's pretty good.
That was a lot better than I thought. Hey, everybody. Thanks for coming. I'm David Niles. This moderately, averagely good-looking guy. I mean, he came out. That was weirder than I thought.
Yeah.
This guy's Adam Minahan. We run the Catholic radio station here in town. 94.9, if you don't listen to that. You should. Everybody, I want it all to be on your preset. Number one, 94.9. 94.9. It's the best station in Tulsa, hands down. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We're really excited about our speaker tonight, Dr. John Cutterback. Thank you to St. Anne's for hosting today. Phenomenal job. Drew Fenton over this, that young man over there, I believe, cooked all the food. I had no idea, Drew. You really surprised me. And thank you to Father Matt and Father Sean for allowing us to be here. I thought it was impressive. I walked up in today, and here comes the pastor carrying food out. It's like, all right, talk about leading by example right there, Father Matt. Way to go. Way to go. Yeah. So anyway, thank you. Our speaker tonight is Dr. John Cutterback. He's a professor of philosophy at Christendom College in Virginia. I had the pleasure of first coming across him a couple years ago at a conference kind of out near Clear Creek. It's called the Idea of a Village Conference. He was just so impressive that we had to bring him out. And so he'll be talking tonight on forming an intentional household, how to build your life at home. It is in order with a good Christian life.
We also want to thank the Catholic Gift and Bookstore, who's right over here. They are always a strong supporter of St. Michael Radio, so feel free to buy as many books as you possibly can carry home after the talk. One last thing before we have Dr. Cutterback join us is Dr. John Cutterback's web address is From Bacons to Acorns, and he's about to launch a new website. And so he wanted to make sure that you guys knew about it. So what he's done is he has a sign-up sheet for you to put your email address. And what he'll do is he'll send you an email whenever the new website is available. And that way you can stay up to date with all of his ideas, videos, blogs. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pass this around. Now, there's only like 8 spots per page, but you guys, I believe in you. You can probably put your email on the back and we can make room. So I also just want to thank you guys very much for coming this evening. I know that Thursday night is not a convenient night a lot of times. I appreciate everybody's support and being able to come. Our goal at St. Michael's, whenever we were trying to figure out a way to provide a community aspect in the diocese, was to bring in a speaker so that way we could all have dinner together, we can break bread together, we can learn a little bit about our faith together, and be able to invite our CIA members, non-Catholics, our friends, our family, to join us. So I want to thank everybody who invited somebody else out here and everybody who came this evening. Thank you guys so much. It really means a lot. I'll let you introduce them.
Dr. John Cutterback. Thank you. Thank you.
Good evening. Thank you very much, Adam and David. That was a kind introduction. It is an honor and a blessing to be here. I have to say, it's always very difficult for me, as it is for you, to leave home. And I'm still blessed to have half of my family has left the nest and half the family is still in the nest. And we have certain rituals when I'm leaving. And it's always, I do tend to be a melancholic person. And so I wonder whether partially they're reading on me kind of a slight, je ne sais quoi. I mean, how does one say that I'm leaving? And even I have to admit, there's a little bit of a fear. You know, just when you're going to be gone, you're never certain you're going to come home. There's that moment as I'm saying goodbye that's just really, really hard. But I suppose is a nice reminder of what a blessing we have in those that we live with. But What I wanted to say is, arriving in Tulsa, I'm here to tell you, if you don't spend much time outside of Tulsa, let me tell you something about Tulsa. It's not like the rest of the world, all right? If you haven't noticed that yet, you should know that. I have been overwhelmed. Now, maybe I'm just with the nicest 20% of Tulsans. I'm not sure, but I mean, every place I've stopped, people are smiling and greeting me. And any case, it's great to be here, and I'm very excited to turn to what we have before us, which is a serious and an exciting topic. So I'm going to go ahead and jump in here. The thing that I've decided to focus on in talking about an intentional household, I've chosen to focus on a little known virtue. And I'm going to focus on that virtue. You might at first wonder why I'm doing that. And I'm going to work you a little bit. You're going to have to think with me this evening. I am a philosophy professor. And so we're going to be a little bit philosophical. Don't worry, though. I'm going to ask you if you're willing to come along with me. We're going to see some really exciting things. And one thing I'm going to suggest to you is the world today needs a little more philosophy. I might put it this way. In a culture that is more intact, that is more healthy, it's not as necessary that everybody stop and reflect and study and consider some of these very difficult questions. It's not as important when the culture is intact that everybody do that, because certain good customs, the flow of things tends to be bringing you in the right direction. But when the flow of things is so profoundly contrary to our happiness, is so profoundly contrary to the good life, even just naturally speaking, not to mention from the viewpoint of Christianity, then it is particularly important that we all establish certain habits of reflecting and studying so as to understand what we are about. The little known virtue that's little known much to our detriment and, dare I say, unhappiness, is called domestic prudence. I'm going to end up introducing you to the broader virtue of prudence, which you've certainly heard of and distinguished between several kinds, and the term domestic just means having to do with the household. This is the virtue I'm going to suggest to you here this evening that everybody should make be at the center of their household living. Here's my plan. I'm first of all then going to examine domestic prudence, its nature, some parts of the virtue, and its end or goal. Then, secondly, I'm going to look more practically then, more specifically and concretely, on how to work at forming this virtue and the two foundational relationships in the household that this virtue is most of all about, namely the relationship between spouses and the relationship between parents and children. And these things apply to all of us, a number of us are at different stages in life, but in some way, these will apply to all of us. I'm going to open with something that I take for granted, ladies and gentlemen, and that is that the household, the reality of this amazing community designed by God, a natural community called for by human nature itself, is in very serious crisis. Very strong forces are arrayed against it, and I mean very strong, supernatural and natural forces at work. I will paraphrase a thought of the great Father John Hardin, S.J. He said something to this effect: in today's world, only the heroic will really be able to thrive because of how contrary the situation is. We'll have to be intentional. I like the word, and I'm going to tell you right up front what I mean by the word intentional. I use it in a very philosophical sense. Intention names an act of the will. To be intentional about something is to choose with your will to set it as an end. And when you set it as an end, it means you're not just saying, you know, I'd really like to do this. It's one thing to say, I'd like to do this. It's another thing to say, I intend to do this. Intend means you are willfully setting it as something you are going to do, and you will it in such a way that you will also will anything that is necessary to get there. So again, to be intentional about whatever it is means to set this thing as an end to be achieved. It includes the willingness to do whatever it takes to get there, and that includes a willingness to study, to think through, to turn to the wise, to work together, to come to understand the specific ways that this great end is achieved. Because any experience in human life, ladies and gentlemen, shows us great things are never achieved by accident. They are achieved by those who know what they want and know how to go about it. we're going to be talking about something that is so, in such a primary sense, worth intending and worth going about getting. It's going to be an arduous labor, but it is one that is worthwhile. We're not going to be able to assume much, ladies and gentlemen, in this project of being intentional in our household. We can't assume that our parents have told us how to go about this. We can't assume that the communities to which we belong have necessarily formed us as perhaps they could have and should have. We can't assume that, well, we'll just figure it out in time. We need to be vigilant and we need to be hopeful. Regarding the first focus here then, and really the main focus, domestic prudence, I want to note that we face particular obstacles. First obstacles, this virtue is little known. It's barely ever talked about. The fact that it's not even in our radar is a problem, because then we can't be intentional about forming it and going about cultivating it in our lives. Secondly, as I've already adverted to, there are deep currents in our culture that push against it, making it difficult for us to cultivate it. How many young couples are there that are setting forth on the amazing, the astounding, beautiful thing called marriage and forming a household, who are setting out into shark-infested waters with a strong riptide, and there's not much formation going on about how to swim, and they're trying to figure it out, and God bless them, and God will bless them. We're going to kind of step up here together and take some steps to try to form ourselves a little better by turning to the tradition and doing some thinking with our tradition. So, prudence. First thing under talking about then domestic prudence, I'm going to introduce you to the general virtue here. It's a practical, intellectual virtue. It deliberates, it judges, it commands. Those are all kind of technical terms in our tradition. You have a feel for them. We don't need to go through and define everything. It's a virtue that deliberates, it judges, and it commands so as to bring a person or a community to its true flourishing. Intellectual virtue. So it's a habit. I like to say a habit. Habit is such an important term. A habit's a groove in the soul. God has designed our soul so that we get grooves by how we go about acting. We always are forming grooves, whether they be good ones or not good ones. Our soul gets grooves in it. Moral ones, which are more habits or grooves of how we desire, and intellectual grooves, which are more grooves, habits of how we think. Prudence is fundamentally a virtue of how we think. It's the linchpin. It's the guiding force in the good life. I'm going to give you a quotation from one of my favorite authors. If you have the handout, take a peek. If you don't, it's not mission critical, but I'd like you to be able to take it with you and be able to look at it. I'm going to come back to quotation number one later. Joseph Pieper, masterpiece of a book called The Four Cardinal Virtues. Thus, prudence is cause, root, mother, measure, precept, guide, and prototype of all ethical or moral virtues. It acts in all of them, perfecting them to their true nature. All virtues participate in it, and by virtue of this participation, they are virtues. He's talking about virtue on the natural level. We're not talking about infused virtues at this point of faith, hope, and charity. He's talking about the natural structure of virtues of the good life. Prudence is the linchpin. It's more important than even justice or courage or temperance, in as much as it's the know-how of how to do all those. So in a word, to have prudence is to truly know how to live in all circumstances of life. It's that rich. What I'm going to do now, ladies and gentlemen, is this is where I'm going to ask you to dig deep a little bit with him. I think we're going to be able to see some wonderful points here. This is what St. Thomas Aquinas calls different parts of the virtue of prudence. I know right now you're wondering, why am I going to do that? I promise you, it's going to come together and you're going to see. This is a treasure. It's part of our inheritance. To turn to this is to form ourselves in a centuries, millennia-old tradition of the various things that come together to empower someone to be prudent. So, first up, prudence presupposes and is rooted in good moral dispositions. In other words, what we mean by moral dispositions, ladies and gentlemen, is our desires, is our appetites. According to the tradition, this is an incredibly beautiful point. The most fundamental way to form the ability of a human person to think clearly about the good life is to form certain desires in them. I use the technical term for desires, appetites. And so think of children. It's difficult to, there is an intellectual aspect also. I'm not going to leave that aside. We'll say something about that. But from the earliest days, before children can understand much, you can be forming what they want. the things that they are attracted towards. And to do that is to be forming their ability to be prudent. This key first thing about prudence is there is no such thing as a truly prudent man who doesn't have good, well-ordered desires. This includes with it a rather striking and somewhat scary negative side to it. Disordered desires are the bullet that kills prudence. And according to tradition, the major threat to prudence is intemperance, more specifically, a lack of chastity. And so we particularly see the wise in the tradition have always asserted to protect our ability to think clearly about what is good, to think clearly about our life and the life of our loved ones. We need to be putting order into our appetites. So first, then, big takeaway there. To cultivate prudence, we need to be cultivating good desires. Quick sidebar, and with children, one of the best ways to cultivate good desires in children is simply to expose them to the good things that their nature most of all wants. And children come alive. It brings out their good desires. So if you found yourself saying, how do you try to bring out good desires in children? By exposing them to the things that precisely will bring it out. Nature is very much alive in children and ready to come out when we cultivate it. Second point, it's reasoning, prudence. We're going through different requirements. I'm not even going to go through all the ones that St. Thomas does, but I'm going to take you through a handful of them. So the first one is make sure to be developing on the level of ordering our desires and our appetites. Second point, its reasoning begins with the right first principles, which are basic insights into the good human life. Here's an intellectual side. If prudence, if we're going to think clearly in the concrete about what to do, we're going to have formed fundamental principles of what is good. What does a good human life look like? Again, I say, our nature is at work there. There is, the tradition says, the light of natural reason is always shining in every one of us, but we need to draw that out. One way that I like to, in view of that, describe a good way to think about raising up children well, and of course this applies to not just children, put children in environments where the things that they naturally should be able to see as good, they will. Say that again. Try to put them in the kind of environment where the light of natural reason will work. This is a very important point philosophically. You've heard of something called natural law. Quick sidebar here. In times, say to yourself, if these things are supposed to be not knowable by natural law, why is it seen that so many people don't see them? Natural law wasn't designed to work in a vacuum. It's designed to come out when in a context that draws it out. You put a child in a certain kind of family environment, and boom, they see certain things, and their heart moves towards that, and they understand. You have them in a different environment, and they're not able to see because they haven't been given the context. So there's an intellectual formation that needs to be going on. The third, prudence requires life experience and memory. I love the notion of the importance of memory. And the point that St. Thomas makes here is this. The good life is very complicated, because this is what prudence does, ladies and gentlemen. It applies universal principles in concrete circumstances. This is the key to understanding prudence and really understanding the good life. There's a couple of moving parts here. If you don't have the right first principles, you're not going to be able to apply them. But you can't just have the right first principles. You have to have a sense of the more concrete particularities. There's a lot of stuff that comes out in the experience of life that you only learn from experience and from remembering it. And so St. Thomas says, to cultivate prudence, cultivate memory. Particularly in this day and age where there's so many things that are working against our memory. A memory is a precious thing. There are ways of cultivating that. We can talk about that more later. Right off the bat, I just say, Lord, help me to see, help me to learn, and help me to be a man of memory. Next point, prudence requires docility. This quotation from St. Thomas, I'm going to read you quotation number 3 here from the handout. I gave a whole paragraph just because I think that this is so rich and so worth noting. St. Thomas says, I answer that as stated above. Prudence is concerned with particular matters of action. And since such matters are of infinite variety, no one man can consider them all sufficiently. Nor can this be done quickly, for it requires length of time. Hence, in matters of prudence, man stands in very great need of being taught by others, especially by old folk, who have acquired a sane understanding of the ends in practical matters. Wherefore, the philosopher, that means Aristotle, says, it is right, listen to this astounding line, it's right to pay no less attention to the undemonstrated assertions and opinions of such persons as are experienced, older than we are, and prudent, than to their demonstrations, for their experience gives them an insight into principles. Now we quote scripture, thus it is written, lean not on thine own prudence. And Ecclesiasticus, which is also Sirach, stand in the multitude of the ancients, i.e. the old men, that are wise, and join thyself from thy heart to their wisdom. Now it is a mark of docility to be ready to be taught. Consequently, docility is fittingly reckoned as a part of prudence. Ladies and gentlemen, we're working our way up here. We're going to be prudent, and this is so important, particularly in today's day and age. We have to be willing to be taught. We are being consistently encouraged by our society. You can figure out everything for yourself. You can be the measure of things. And our tradition is very clear. If we're going to get this straight, we have to be willing to go to the wise, both the wise back in the past in our tradition and the wise around us in our life. Isn't that an amazing line from Scripture? Lean not on thy own prudence. It's astounding. You need to be prudent. But for you to be prudent, you need to learn to turn to the prudent so that you know how to be prudent. At what point do you know that you're prudent? It seems to me part of your prudence is always knowing there are those who are more prudent. And even if you're someone that others turn to, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be turning to others yourself, because you're going to drop the ball. If you think now that you're there, it seems to me that's what he's saying. And may throw out a quick point here. Let's think about grandparents for just a moment. St. Thomas, again, did you note the recurring thing there when he talks about docility? Docility to the elderly. The point isn't that every elderly person is necessarily wise, but that's the natural structure of things. In God's great providence, he intended that for the young to learn what they must learn, that they must turn to the old. And isn't it fitting in God's great design, and sometimes it works out more in some families than in others, depending on timing and so forth, that grandparents can be such a special way of that happening. And so I just say, if we're parents, anything we can do to put our children in the presence of their grandparents. And may I just say to grandparents, be there and speak up. Don't be bashful. Say something. It might not seem they're hearing now. You know as well as I do. They're going to remember it one day, even if they're not seemingly taking it right now. This is the beautiful structure of things. I go on. I'm going to move quickly through this one. It takes a strong reasoning power. I'm in quotation number 4. The work of prudence is to take good counsel, as stated in the Ethics. Now, counsel is a research proceeding from certain things to others, but this is the work of reason. Wherefore, it's requisite for prudence that man should be an apt reasoner. Very quickly, what I want to say on that is this. We need to train ourselves to think well about the most important things, and this starts at home. We're about to turn to talking completely about the household, and I'm keeping this rather general at the moment, but I want to go ahead and say this right now. I can tell you this as a philosophy professor. I've been teaching people between the age of 18 and 20 odd for a quarter century. It makes a big difference what kind of thinking and conversations were going on in their household. Was there a habit of asking the most important questions again and again and again, and talking about them as a community, humbly turning to the wise, moving forward cautiously, but also with confidence? We need to train their thinking. And ladies and gentlemen, in a day and age, don't think I'm simply taking a swipe here at STEM, but a day and age that puts such a premium on science, etc., mathematics, that reasoning has its place. Is a much lower kind of reasoning. How many young people devote almost all their time to developing their ability to reason in a very narrow vein, whereas their reason was designed to be used in a much deeper vein than that? It can be done together, but how many end up spending their most of their energy on developing their ability to reason in just that area?
Men, have you checked out Exodus 90 lately? If you've heard of Exodus 90 before, you're probably thinking cold showers and Lent. But the Exodus 90 app offers so much more. It's a daily companion to help you grow to closer to God and to become the man you want to be. This summer, I'm following along with the app's daily scriptures, reflections, and prayers. It's awesome. On the app, you can join the Enthronement to the Sacred Heart, the Exodus 90 Summer Book Club, and St. Michael's Lent, which starts August 15th and leads up to the Feast of St. Michael the Archangel on September 29th. St. Michael's Lent is an ancient tradition of prayer and fasting popularized by St. Francis in the Middle Ages that's been lost in our time. Let's bring it back. Join the men of Exodus 90 and four Carlos Martins, Catholic priest, exorcist, and host of the Exorcist Files, who will serve as our spiritual guide for St. Michael's Lent this year on the Exodus 90 app. We will awaken to invisible realities and enter into the spiritual battle that rages around us all the time. Go to exodus90.com for a 14-day free trial to the Exodus 90 app and to learn more about St. Michael's Lent. That's exodus90.com to join us for St. Michael's Lent starting August 15th.
Finally, it requires what he calls providence or foresight, which is looking into the future. This is quotation number 5. Consequently, future contingents, insofar as they can be directed by man to the end of human life, are the matter of prudence. Future contingents means what will happen in the future or not. And each of these things is implied in the word foresight. It implies the notion of something distant, to which that which occurs in the present has to be directed. Therefore, foresight is part of prudence. What he's saying here is to be prudent, we need to learn to see the future. To see the future in this sense, ladies and gentlemen, we can train ourselves, if we're thinking about the most important questions, we can train ourselves to think about the future according to the principles of the good life. It's not that you have to become clairvoyant. It's not that you have to know exactly what's going to happen and where. But I touch and then go on this. This is something to be cultivating in us, to be the kind of person that is constantly scanning the horizon in the sense of looking to see what we think is coming so as to know what to do now. It's always about living in the present, but you need to look to the future in order to do that. I said finally, but there's one more. Quotation 6 is about caution. I'm on the backside. The things with which prudence is concerned are contingent matters of action, wherein even as false is found with true, so is evil mingled with good, on account of the great variety of these matters of action, wherein good is often hindered by evil, and evil has the appearance of good. Therefore, prudence needs caution, so that we may have a grasp of good as to avoid evil. Great note for us, especially today. He notes it's always been the case that evil will masquerade as good. We're an age where we see that in spades. To learn to be extremely vigilant about discerning the way, caution will always be a part of prudence. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I now turn to domestic prudence itself. This is the prudence of the household. This is the know-how that guides a household community to its flourishing. Here's my definition of domestic prudence: the practical intellectual virtue that deliberates, that judges, that commands well about the whole of life in the household. Take a look at quotation number 7, if you will. The end of domestic prudence is a good life in general as regards the conduct of the household. I love this phrase, a good life in general. There's a such thing as being, you can use the word prudent about, I'm prudent about this little part of life. I'm prudent in business. How many people spend their time trying to be prudent simply in a small area of life, such as in business? What he's saying here is this prudence, domestic prudence, is the ability to think clearly about the whole of a good life as lived together in a family community. Quotation number 8. The context here is, he says, can sinners have domestic prudence? You have to take that term properly. I'll make a qualification here in a second. Some sinners may be provident in certain matters of detail concerning the disposition of their household, but not in regards to a good life in general, as regards the conduct of the household, for which, above all, virtuous life is required. The stunning insight here, we're all sinners. What he means is someone who is more steeped in sin and is kind of willing to stay in sin, the habitual sinner. Just the stunning insight here is to succeed in thinking well, in guiding well a household, is going to require of us that we have achieved this astounding thing called moral virtue, which we'd already adverted to. Let's now go on to domestic prudence, more specifically now in what is its goal. And here is the linchpin, number 9. This has all been from St. Thomas. Here Aristotle infers that the chief aim of parents concerns these two relationships with one another and with their children more than other things. Here's the beautiful truth. I never tire of emphasizing this. And you might be thinking, what's the big deal here? I'm really going to invite you to focus on this with me. I really think it's going to give you something to chew on. What is it that most governs the entire realm of parents looking at their life in a household and trying to discern what to do, right? The whole realm of deliberating and judging about how are we going to do this household thing. Approximately, what is he saying? You most of all are seeking, and that you judge, as it were, how you're doing by. How is the relationship between the spouses? And how is the relationship between parents and children? The household is for the flourishing of those relationships. And ladies and gentlemen, this is very simple, but it's very profound. Does this not correspond to experience? I know this is kind of a painful thing to say, because we all know in God's providence, these things aren't always directly in our control. And things can happen in these relationships that aren't necessarily for our lack of having tried. We understand that. We just are to do what we can do. But I want to ask you this. Show me a man who has a good relationship with his wife and has a good relationship with his children. And this is a happy man. This is a flourishing human being. Our culture is losing the most simple and profound realities such as that. It never comes easily. Anyone in this room has been married for any length of time knows there is no such thing as a good relationship between spouses, except as the fruit of a hard, long labor. And is it not the same with our children? It's one thing with 5-year-olds. It's another thing with 10-year-olds. And it's another thing with 18-year-olds. And it's another thing with 30-year-olds. And what else is our life about? This has given us something very simple to focus on. I'm going to come back at the end and say, it's never going to be about the blame game, but let's nonetheless just speak about in a very exciting and hopeful way, what is the focus? Family, relationships first. This is our first and proximate responsibility. In any case, most, if you have decided to be married, you have therefore decided to make those relationships be the proximate, the close center of your life. Now I'm going to talk on working on these relationships. All right. That was the kind of hard philosophical background that now I'm going to try to grab some. So if you're thinking, oh, okay, yep, I'm thinking phew too. All right. We got through there. Let's talk about some applications here. So I'm going to use what we said about prudence as an angle from which to consider those two relationships. I'm going to talk about spousal relationship, I'm going to talk about parental relationship. And all of us are in those pretty much at least go in one direction or another. Let's talk about spousal. We exercise domestic prudence together. I'm going to put it to you this way. In a sense, what else do spouses do? I'm going to ask you a really big one here right now. Wendell Berry is an author I've learned a lot from. He asked this question, what is it traditionally that concretely in a day-to-day way held marriages together? He said in the old days, this was rather straightforward. Doesn't mean it was easy. But you got married to form a household, to build a household. A household was a project that you invested your full self into. When a man proposes to a wife, to a woman, pardon me, is he not fundamentally saying, I am inviting you to join me in a life project? This is what we're going to do together. This is what we're going to have in common. This responsibility, is this not what most of all unites us? I ask you, in a sense, what more fundamental do we have in common than that we build this? This is why Wendell Berry, and I mean, this is very provocative thought right here. In his view, he's completely natural viewpoint. He just says this. He says, in my opinion, one of the main reasons that marriages don't last is because husband and wives don't have much that they do together. So I'm going to say something that's a reality. Sorry, it's a little bit crude. But he says, if people get married just basically thinking they'll go out and they'll at least just kind of have their own life, and then they sleep together, and then they just have their own life, and then they sleep together, well, ladies and gentlemen, the verdict's in. No one has any interest in that as an enduring model. It doesn't work. This isn't relationship. We need to be doing something rich and real that involves our whole persons that we are building together. So my first principle here is domestic prudence is what unites concretely a man and a woman together, because we have to do this together. And that's the incredible, beautiful thing here, which brings us to this, which is one of the harder points I have here. Husband and wife each have a unique input in this thing called domestic prudence. And I can't emphasize this enough. This is worthy of much more attention than I'm going to give it. And I'm going into incredibly important and dangerous waters. But I'm going to go ahead and just say to you this right now. In the view of the tradition, you discover the reason that man and woman are different from one another, and they are naturally different from one another. There's a reason that they're different from one another. And the reason, most fundamentally, is so that they can each have their different and unique inputs into building a household. And if we don't have households anymore, then I say to you, no wonder we have a gender identity crisis. Why would you be a man or a woman if there's not a design of nature that gives a context for that real difference to flourish, to come alive? I'm going to challenge you even more. You ready? I ask you, right now I'm not going to pretend to give an answer tonight, so, but nonetheless, I need to say this to you. Do you know what the difference is between a man and a woman? Don't say anything. Just let me look you in the eye and ask you a question. Do you know what the difference is between a man and a woman? Once upon a time, it didn't matter so much to explicitly ask the question because it was taken for granted, but maybe there's a blessing. And now the question has to be asked. If you're like me, maybe you tend to get offended at those over here who, well, I don't see what the difference is. And we get all kind of hot. Well, you don't see, it's obvious. Be careful. One of those times when you're saying to someone, it's obvious, that person might just look back to you and say, and what is it? And what are you going to say? Well, you know, we'll just kind of look, right? I'm sorry, that doesn't do it. Because ladies and gentlemen, at the end of the day, the difference is much more than what you see with your eyes. What is it? What we have to do is we have to understand the household, what it is, and how to exercise domestic prudence, because each has a unique input into it. So this much I'm going to say. A husband needs to take first responsibility. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm just going to say this quickly, and I'm going to spend right now about 5 minutes on the difference between man and woman and their roles in the household. This, to me, I try to teach this. It is the most difficult thing I teach. And this is among young folks who are from families that are fundamentally intact, where they already have been exposed to this. Almost every word you say is a minefield. In my experience, we have people that, pardon me for putting it this way, are hyper-traditionalists who just start to kind of pound about how man is just in charge, baby. And it's frankly wrong-headed, in my opinion, and I think in the position of the tradition. And then, of course, you know, obviously, you got the other side that's saying it's all about equality. There's no such thing as headship. To get this one right, ladies and gentlemen, is one of the central challenges of our age. And I'm going to say just a couple things, and we're going to leave it at that. And I think it's something we need to pray about, and it's something we need to continue to deliberate about together. I'm going to keep using the word husband has first responsibility. He has first authority. I'm going to give a couple quick examples of what I think that means. Here is one. When it comes to the point after much communal deliberation together, if a husband and wife after much communal deliberation together are not able to discern a way forward in agreement, then it must be the case that this is where a husband, by his natural place, is to step up and say, I will take responsibility and I will say, this is what we must do. It's not imposing his will, but it is his responsibility. How many men there do fall short? And that's a very hard thing to do. It's something that a man would tremble to do. But that is an essential aspect of headship, is the first responsibility. At times, you just might not see completely eye to eye, but the family must move forward. Judgments must be made. And there, yes, I am going to say that that aspect of our tradition, too many people are embarrassed of, and we must be willing to come forward and say that that's absolutely critical. But it's always for the common good. It is always because it's 100% about discerning what we are to do together. And the other thing I'd say is an example of the man's firstness in the sense of a first authority is he is the one who is first responsible that whatever this difference is between man and woman, he's the one that must make this whole relationship be safe, where each can play his and her role. It's his responsibility first to make sure that happens. It's not, first of all, a woman's responsibility to make the household safe for masculinity. It is a man's responsibility to make a household the place that his wife's femininity will flower. If he doesn't step up and do that, her femininity will not be able to flower. She is a true second authority who has an absolutely unique contribution that he could never do himself. His being first does not mean that he can any way replace the necessity of the second. And here, and this is where I'm going to end on this whole topic that needs to be talked about much more, a man is not like a general in the army. A general in the army simply has more authority than the one underneath him and just can call the whole shot. He doesn't need to listen to the colonel. Maybe he will, maybe he won't. The general's just simply in charge. That's not the way it is in the household. For the shared authority to work, he must exercise his first authority in such a way that he recognizes her unique contribution and gives her the ability to make it. And if he fails in that, then the joint exercise of domestic prudence will fail. And it will first of all be his fault because he did not see that he had to find her place and bring it in. That's all I'm going to say about that. But I say, in the context of saying domestic prudence, the virtue of reasoning well about our life together in the household, it's first of all about making sure that two relationships are going well. I will say this to you, and it certainly corresponds to my experience. To the extent that we don't get that right, there will be constant chafing between the husband and wife. And to the extent that we do get it right, there's a happiness, the likes of which I suppose is only known by those who, by God's grace, do it. A couple of principles as regards the parental relationship. The goal of parenting, I'd like to cast in these terms. There's other ways to cast it, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not saying this is the only way to cast it, but consider this as a beautiful and helpful way. The role of parents is to form children so that they will be able to be prudent and to live domestic prudence in some form or fashion one day themselves. That, I think, is the simplest way to say, what is my goal in my parenting so that I have a healthy and flourishing relationship with my children? I'm very excited to read you quotation number 10, which I really love. Once again, St. Thomas. He loves to compare us with other animals, for we are animals. For other animals have a kind of prudence that enables them to provide for themselves. I mean, think of the squirrels. There's a kind of foresight they have. There's a kind of prudence. They take care of their things. It's not rational, but it could be called a prudence. Other animals have a kind of prudence that enables them to provide for themselves, whereas man lives by reason, which can attain to prudence only after long experience, so that children need to be instructed by their parents who are experienced. Moreover, children are not capable of this instruction as soon as they are born, but only after a long time, and especially when they reach the age of discretion. Besides, this instruction requires a long time. He just said, you can't really start explicitly forming them prudence until years after they're born. And then when you do start, it still takes years more, he's saying. Even then, on account of the assaults of the passions, whereby the judgment of prudence is perverted, they need not only instruction, but correction. You know what the context of that is? This is St. Thomas giving a natural argument that a man and a woman have to stay together for their whole life. He said, because parenting is a lifelong thing. The beauty and the power of thinking in terms of prudence, going back to how we introduced it, prudence is this central virtue, how to live the good life, knowing how to do it for yourself. And then in the higher instance of being able to join with the person you love and have your shared mission in life to be, we exercise prudence together over ourselves as the beginning of this community and then anyone else in this community with whom God blesses us. Wherein otherwise is happiness, naturally speaking? That parents, how do we conceptualize the goal for our children to form them so that they can do that? And if that is the principle that's always, always guiding us, as opposed to, for instance, how many of us parents have made the mistake of, we want our children to simply act this way. I need immediate obedience, right? I need them to be acting. I need, in any case, external conformity. There's a place for that. But we need to understand the goal. The goal is so much richer. It is such a field for our exercise for when a husband and a wife in the evening sit down together and say, how are we doing in arranging things unto bringing the prudence out in our children for which they were made. I'm going to skip a couple of things here, and I'm going to just make a suggestion for a few questions to ask in a spousal relationship and the parental relationship, and I'll try to do that in 2 minutes here. A couple of concrete questions to ask to judge our spousal relationship, a couple of concrete questions to ask judge our parental relationship. And I honestly, earnestly suggest that we explicitly do this, that we have this kind of conversation. And may I say, if we experience ourselves as too busy to ask this kind of question explicitly of our spouse, then, dare I say, we are simply too busy. What is my goal in our home life together? What are we trying to achieve here? I like to suggest that we need to think about that very specifically. Just saying the salvation of souls, which is a great answer, is nonetheless too general. There's many concrete ways of characterizing what we're trying to do in this amazing community called the household that this prudence is directed towards. We need to be speaking to one another about that. What are our main goals apart from just living the household itself? I just want to make this as a quick side point. Where did I fail in doing this? Ask my wife, what other things do you want to do in your life in addition to simply focusing on the raising of our children, which in your generosity, I know you're going to do. What other things can we integrate into the household because they're things that were very dear to your heart? In my experience, if a husband doesn't ask that of a woman, the most generous women, they won't speak up and say it, though they probably should. The husband needs to take the lead in drawing that out. Another question asks, what is our specific desire as regards having children? In my experience, one of the most dramatic, powerful, challenging, and difficult aspects of domestic prudence is that astounding issue of having children. How many? When? This deserves much more attention. But I want to say this to you. This is walking a tightrope, ladies and gentlemen. And again, we all know there's the extreme of our society that's saying, don't worry about children, kind of do your own thing, right? Catastrophe. There's another extreme, ladies and gentlemen. There's those who, in seeking to be very generous perhaps, think that the generosity God is calling us to is somehow coextensive with more children. Great generosity does not necessarily always mean more children. So how do we think carefully about that? Again, I encourage men, this should be a normal topic of our communal discernment. I think that much more often than we realize, husband and wife are not seeing eye to eye on this. And that's a critical part of their happiness together, that they learn to think more clearly about that. I have to read you then, as regards that, the last quotation on the page. Quotation number 11. This is St. John Paul II from his Reflections on Humanae Vitae. Man is a rational free being, can and must reread with discernment that biological rhythm which belongs to the natural order, can and must conform to it so as to exercise that responsible parenthood. Note his bold use of that term. He knows that the term responsible parenthood is misused by many people. Sometimes we just have to boldly come forward and reclaim words. There's a such thing as responsible parenthood, which is a generous parenthood, which according to the Creator's design is inscribed in the natural order of human fecundity. The concept of a morally correct regulation of fertility is nothing other than the rereading of the language of the body and truth. Ladies and gentlemen, there is one of the main fields of this astounding virtue of domestic prudence in the generosity of discerning and acting out how many children, when, and how to raise them. One thing I'd like to end with is, I don't have time for the list of questions I want to ask about the parental relationship. Just going to say this one. Am I sitting down with each of my children and starting a specific conversation about how they are doing in life? I know many young people who needed to hear that, who needed their parents to explicitly come and be involved in their life in that way. And I just want to throw this out there to myself and to you. We must not assume that our children know and feel our intimate care for them at every moment. How many of us, especially men, become so absorbed in what we're doing and we don't do the explicit ways of showing our children? The other day, may I just share with this with you? Probably the most externally competent of my children, who is 17 years old, I came in and sat down next to her. And the other night, she just said to me, "Daddy, I've had a really hard day. Will you just hold me for a minute?" Normally, they don't say that, but they're thinking that much more often than I think we know. So I just wanted to say that. Just wanted to share that. Ladies and gentlemen, I end by giving you the Holy Family. By the grace of God, we might not be able to be exactly like them, but by the grace of God, we can come close. I thank you very much for your attention.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the great, the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So, for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
I might have worked you so hard there that I've beaten the questions out of you. Any questions out there? As I say to my students, if you don't ask me one, I'll ask you. Father in the back, please.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
I have a question. You kind of gave the introduction of, you know, it's important to be deeper thinkers, thinking about some of the bigger issues, asking why. Would you have a recommendation of like a book just to get people started on that deeper thinking or something of that sort just to kind of cue it off?
That's a great question. I'm hard-pressed to just name a book. I'm going to name an author here. The Joseph Pieper that I quoted, his book on the four cardinal virtues. He has a book called Leisure, the Basis of Culture. He has a book called In Tune with the World, A Theory of Festivity. These are philosophical books, so they're not for the faint of heart, but at the same time, they are written for a general audience. If we mean more specifically as regards the issues that we're talking about here, I need to think about that more. Honestly, I think more needs to be written on that, and I'm working on trying to do that myself also. I'm going to think about that and circle back, Father. Was there a particular area, or more just thinking for someone who wants to be cultivating a deeper understanding of the deeper questions in general?
Just something if I had a parishioner who's like, geez, Father, I want to be a deeper thinker. I don't know.
Yeah.
Just for like the average Joe and someone who's just wanting to kind of live life a little bit more. And I could say, oh, I got a book just for you.
Yeah, wow. Again, great. I'm always frustrated when I'm somewhat stumped by those because, of course, it also does depend upon kind of knowing the great question, but, you know, where the person is. Honestly, something like the catechism is something that will immediately start to exercise the intellect and refers to the tradition quite a bit. I think that is a great place to start to say you want to get to know your faith better. Honestly, that would be one major thing. And I'm going to think what else I might recommend there. Yes, ma'am, please.
St. Michael's Catholic Radio has a program in the morning, the Pop Chicks. And I just feel like they have such wise advice that he calls himself the family man. And he recommends quite a bit of practical things for family.
Great.
Thank
Super.
You, St. Michael's Catholic Radio.
Yeah, great. Thank you. There you go.
You'll get your, we'll pay you later.
There you go. Nice job.
I'd like your comments on social media in today's family, television, video games, Facebook, texting. And I've been out to dinner too many times where I see a family of six sitting together at dinner, and they're all like,
"Sir, I hear you. I'm going to give you 45 seconds on that. I have written an article that says the challenge of technology in the household. You want to email me? I would be happy to send you what I've written on that. I think that one of the main things I should have mentioned that one of the main areas in exercising domestic prudence and thinking about the challenges that we have is how are we going to deal with the technology problem and an extremely, extremely serious problem it is. There are some very, very good books on that. I'll recommend right now a book by Sherry Turkle called Reclaiming Conversation, jaw-dropping. In the first 20 pages, you're going to realize, my goodness, do we have a problem. Honestly, it's not going to go away, and we are going to have to learn how to tame the technology in certain ways. It would be easier. So yes, I'll go ahead and I'll just say it. I've been around too long to be embarrassed to say such things. Do I think the world would be better off without mobile phones? To me, that doesn't take a moment's thought. But we have them, and the simple fact of the matter is, for almost in almost any line of work that you're in, you're going to have to, and you're going to have to learn to tame it, and you're going to have to think about how to do that with your children. This is going to be a major area to prayerfully and courageously discern. For the sake of preserving humanity, we are losing our ability to be human in certain fundamental ways. When the counseling staff of universities has to set up that they do their counseling by text because the young folk are not willing and comfortable to speak, humanity is being threatened. But we have to understand, ladies and gentlemen, it's very easy to point our fingers at other people. We have to do something about that. They are primarily the victims. Picture yourself as a 12-year-old, as a 14-year-old, as a 16-year-old. That's where life seems to be happening. There's nothing wrong with your child that wants to have that. And so what are you going to do? A lot of parents in the room already know what I'm talking about, and you're going to do that very prayerfully. Anything else? Yes, sir. The question was, I said that it's the husband's responsibility to make the household a place that his wife can flourish. Can I be more specific? In their communal exercise of authority. And this is where, in my experience, some men trying to be hyper-traditional on this point think that the role of the man is to just kind of take over. Have a seat, honey. It's my job to simply take care of this and kind of be the thought guy here. That's wrong-headed, in my opinion, and I think in the opinion of the tradition. I know this is going to sound like a joke, but picture this, where a husband is about to punish a child in a certain way, and the wife just steps forward and says confidently, "Dear, I don't think that would be a good idea right now." And he stops and he looks and he realizes she's right. She has seen what I did not see. Any man who doesn't recognize that his wife will consistently see certain things that he did not see, but it is his responsibility to empower that and bring it out and give it its place. Women can have a sense of, for the sake of the children, I need a little rest right now. We need a little break right now. We need a little space right now. How many kind of overzealous fathers think that they know better? He's failing to see her genius, that it was his to see through her eyes. And so he's not allowing her to exercise her God-given genius. So the husband who profoundly respects her and understands a whole set of things I will only learn if I see through her eyes. Imagine how, dare I use the word, empowered is that woman. She doesn't need to feel as though she's running the household. Her husband implicitly trusts her and is constantly looking out for her good. Dear, do you need a break? Dear, are you getting enough time for the things, again, that are your genius? And the husband has to step up and make the home safe for her. There's a whole other aspect also how he has to look out. I love the image of a man kind of looking outward. He more interfaces with the external world. It's not as though the woman doesn't interface with the external world. She certainly does. But he makes it safe. The glow of her deep attention to persons in here can be safe because in certain ways he's holding. That's just a couple quick thoughts.
Yes, we got you.
Pull the mic when you want to. I'm going to just keep taking questions.
Answer.
So you pull the mic when you want to. Yes.
You had said you should sit down with your wife and talk about the goals you have for your home life together.
Yep.
When you sat down with your wife, what were your specific goals?
That's a tough question. I'd say there's the more general ones, which are ones along the lines of what we're talking about here, of forming virtue in them, you know, having them grow and respond. One of the things that I wanted to say, give them much responsibility. Now, this is where the more that goes on in the household, the better. I like the line somebody said, in giving responsibility to your children, err on giving too much. And then if they mess up, err on the side of forgiving. They have to feel and trust it. And then there's more specific things. With me and my wife, I'm saying things like, I want to be raising animals with the children. I want to be butchering animals with the children. I will explain to my wife how, in my mind, these are things that I see as the concrete ways to try to do these more universal things. So let's talk about agreeing on what the universal things are that we want for our children. And now let's talk about what my vision is, kind of what my own natural desires are. I want to be splitting wood with them. I want to be doing that. But then, dear, what do you want to be doing with the children? My wife wasn't interested in a number of the things that I was, and she wanted to be doing certain other things. And go fancy that. I mean, that conversation for us looks like, again, talking about the most general principles, talk about responsibility, the kind of virtues, the kind of character. And then let's talk very specific. Is it going to be sports? Is it not going to be sports? Is it going to be agricultural endeavors? Are they going to have jobs? That's the kind of conversation I'm talking about. I hope that helps a little bit. Yes, please.
Yeah, last question right here.
You spoke a bit the prior question about the roles and responsibilities of fathers and men. But I was just wondering if there were anything that you would say to wives and to women about, I guess, just specific things that domestic prudence fails in certain ways. It's on the fault of the father, the man. Are there areas in which kind of you see it resting on a woman's shoulders, and what do you see as her specific roles or things that women are in need of in, you know, the culture that they can do to further the domestic prudence?
Okay, great question. Thanks so much for asking. I'm going to say real quick a couple general things that might sound like I'm just repeating myself, but saying it from the other side. I said the husband has the first responsibility to make the house safe for femininity, more than you'd say a woman has a responsibility to make the house safe for masculinity. I firmly believe that. But that said, a woman has an amazing ability to call masculinity out of her husband. I don't know if you've ever seen there's a play is it Arthur Miller? The Crucible. Very, very powerful ending where the husband is in crisis and the wife is just over here and she has complete confidence in his character. But she does not step forward to intervene. But she has this incredible way of just conveying silently, I know you can do this. I don't think women have begun to fathom how much it means to a man when she has confidence that he can do what God is calling him to do as the head of the household. So for her to be willing, and here I'm going to use, I didn't use the word all tonight, but I mean, it's St. Paul's word. There's a kind of way that a woman is called to be subordinate to her husband. We have to parse that out carefully. What an incredible honor, all for the good of the family, honoring of God's plan, that a woman is willing to give him that trust, brings him alive. So for her to kind of call him up by giving him a kind of space to do it and to look to him to draw that out. There's one thing that I'm saying. The other thing I would just say is the warmth, the heart of the household. We need, it's going to be my last point, and I leave it at this. It's so dark out there. There's so much unhappiness. There's so much loneliness. It is still in our power to make our households come alive. You can start a fire and you can be reading around it. And the world can be going to hell, but by golly, you got a set of people right there that are alive. They're together. They know who they are. I'm not going to trivialize it by just saying something like this right now, although I'm going to say it, though I said I'm not going to say it. When the woman brings a plate of cookies. Now, I mean, I'm sorry, do I lose by saying that? But I'm serious. It's not about the cookies, but it's about the incredible genius and love with which she's prepared whatever, this incredible warmth where, and the husband just smiles and he cries and he just thinks, I could never, it's because of the feminine genius of my wife. How do I put it into words? And everybody's heart is singing. It's hard for a woman sometimes to find her way to that, but it's in every woman in a real way, even if in different ways. So to use that notion of a heart and the warmth and the personal connection and just we being here together, I mean, that's the kind of thing that a woman tends to see that she then brings out in a man. By the way, the difference is always to help bring it out in the other anyway. I hope that helped us a little bit, and sorry for going so long, and thank you so much.
Dr. Cutterback, thank you so much for being here. Thanks again for everybody. Dr. Cutterback, I too have cried over a plate of cookies. Yes. I want to just say thank you once again to St. Anne's for hosting. I would like to ask Father Sean to close us with a blessing.
And also thank you for being here. Catholic Radio, yeah, people coming and listening and forming themselves in God's grace. Amen. Thank you for being here, Dr. Cutterback. With praise and thanksgiving in our heart, we look up to the Lord. The Lord be with you. Almighty God bless you, the Father, and the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Go in peace. Thanks be to God.
Thank you, everybody.